In the criminal justice system, the people are represented by two separate yet equally important groups: the police, who investigate crime, and the Crown prosecutors, who prosecute the offenders. These are their stories.
A&E Department, Alderman Hospital, Paddington West 2, Saturday, 22nd October. Holding a clipboard, ward sister Sinead Logan walks purposefully along a corridor. She heads to the busy and chaotic reception of the A&E Department.
Taylor, that's who you should have brought in. I didn't do nothing.
Get the on-call into shutters down.
Hold still, will ya?
Adrenaline, what? Carry on confessions, let's do a chest x-ray.
I need a doctor here.
A young woman lies with her eyes closed.
Get the crash trolley. I need a lining quick as you can.
But everything okay?
Check her blood pressure.
The female doctor checks the woman's pulse as the male doctor checks blood pressure.
Charge to 150.
I was waiting for chest x-rays.
Back in a minute.
Okay, mate.
Yeah, go ahead, control.
You can listen to me.
Sir, it doesn't matter that you were here first. Someone has a knife sticking out of their head. They take priority. So just take a seat and you'll be called as soon as they're ready.
Seriously, I've been here 40 minutes. I just need to know where she is.
I've already told you I have to check with the admissions desk.
What about
just
my prescription?
Take a seat.
This is ridiculous.
Sir, so you can't go through there. Sir, so you can't
still
go
no pulse.
There.
Adrenaline going and check the gases again.
But I'm sorry, you can't be in here.
That's my daughter.
Sir, you really need to wait outside.
What's going on?
Her condition's deteriorated. We're doing everything we can.
The man stares at the doctor.
Is she going to be all right?
The female doctor is handed a printout.
Dr. Mills?
Dr. Mills reads the printout and looks around, grave-faced.
Time to call it. Time of death is 23:17.
The father, Howard Morton, looks distraught.
I'm very sorry.
What are you doing?
I'm afraid your daughter had a total pulmonary collapse.
So do something. Do CPR. Use the paddles.
I'm sorry, we already tried. It didn't work.
No. No, this is crazy. All she had was a sore throat. You don't die from a sore throat. You don't die from a sore throat.
He looks down at his daughter's pale, lifeless face. Sister Logan is with DI Natalie Chandler in her office.
So, this girl comes in with flu, and 4 hours later, she was dead.
Right.
People can die unexpectedly. There can be underlying conditions that aren't diagnosed properly. I know all that. But I've been doing this a long time, and I'm telling you, Nat, Suzanne Morton should not have died.
All right, if you say something's wrong, I believe you. I'm not sure what I can do,
this is the third unexplained death in my ward in the past 6 months. And each time the administration fobbed the family off and it all just gets swept under the carpet.
This is the third one?
I mean, one. Maybe two a year with no obvious cause of death, that wouldn't be out of the question. But this isn't right.
Okay, let me get this straight, Sinead. You think someone on the ward is killing patients?
Yes, I do.
Natalie stares at Sister Logan gravely. A caption, Law. Shots of the characters in various scenes. Bradley Walsh as DS Ronnie Brooks. Jamie Bamber as DS Matt Devlin. Harriet Walter as DI Natalie Chandler. Another caption, Order. Dominic Rowan as Senior Crown Prosecutor Jacob Thorne, Freema Aguman as Junior Crown Prosecutor Alicia Phillips, and Peter Davison as Director of CPS Henry Sharp. Law & Order UK, original series created by Dick Wolfe. This episode is called The Wrong Man. In the morgue.
At this stage, I can tell you how much her liver weighed and what she had for dinner. As to why she died, who knows?
Not even a theory?
I don't do theories. She died because she stopped breathing. There was some congestion, fluid on the lungs. If you want a cause of death, you'll have to wait for the tox screen and the tissue samples.
Any chance you could rush those through?
Standard post-mortem. I ordered the standard tests. They take the standard time. It's the NHS, not CSR.
He wheels his trolley away.
There was me thinking you were Gil Grissom.
Well,
We've tried the dead. Let's see if we have any more luck with the living. Who's the head honcho at the emergency department?
Dr. Edward Austin, senior consultant.
Right.
Ronnie and Matt catch up with Dr. Edward Austin in a lift.
So, you weren't in the emergency department when Suzanne Morton died?
No, I wasn't. When I'm on call, I tend to grab 40 winks whenever the opportunity arises. Saturday tends to be a long shift.
Ah, I thought consultants delegated that kind of thing and spent their days playing golf.
Sadly, those days are long gone. Now, it's all about accountability, competition and choice, or slash and burn, depending on your point of view.
But your staff don't page you when someone has a cardiac arrest.
No, I wouldn't expect them to. The crash team responds immediately. In this case, Christine Mills is a very experienced registrar. Nothing I would have done differently.
Except the girl still died.
Yes, she did, which is obviously a tragedy for the family. But I'm not sure what you expect to find here. These things are regrettable, but they're hardly a crime.
Although we understand that there have been problems regarding other patients at the hospital.
Who told you that?
A source.
Well, I hate to tell you how to do your job, but unless your source is prepared to make these claims publicly, I'd hesitate to believe anything else they had to tell you.
Do you know who admitted Suzanne Morton?
I believe it was a Dr. Simonson. The nurses can tell you where to find him.
Young Dr. Stephen Simonson.
Yeah, she was my last patient before I went off duty. Viral chest infection. Dramatised her symptoms a little, but they often do. I ordered a chest x-ray before I left. Why?
We're investigating her death.
Death?
Yeah, I guess she wasn't dramatising after all, eh?
She died?
Mm-hmm.
You look surprised. Well, she had a chest infection. She wasn't that sick.
Ronnie and Matt share a grave look.
What? You think it was my fault? You think I missed something?
We've just been asked to look into it.
Who treated her after you left?
I'm not sure. One of the registrars would have taken her chance.
Ronnie eyes Simonson and walks off with Matt.
I'm only a first year. They don't let me do anything on my own. You should talk to Dr. Mills.
It was pneumonia. The sputum examination and blood cultures were indicative, and when the chest x-ray came back, it showed fluid on the lungs.
So the first doctor who saw her got it wrong?
No. Dr. Simonson made a provisional diagnosis based on her symptoms and ordered the x-ray to confirm it. He did nothing wrong.
But pneumonia can be treated. I mean, it doesn't kill people.
But it can do if it's complicated by chemical pneumonitis.
Which is?
It's when the lungs become inflamed by an irritant. The patient was feverish and lost consciousness. She must have aspirated some of the contents of her stomach.
And it can happen that quickly. One minute she's okay, next minute she's dead.
If the registrar who was treating her recognised it sooner, we might have been able to save her, but there's really no way of knowing.
You weren't the one treating her?
No, you want to speak to Dr. Grant. And I think he's at lunch.
She picks up the files she was checking through and goes. Ronnie shakes his head.
Well, this is starting to feel like pass the parcel.
Dr. Grant.
If you see Mr. Morton, please extend my condolences.
Right, so you were the one treating Suzanne in the ER?
The ED. Only briefly, we were still waiting for x-rays to come back. Sadly, by the time they did.
So just exactly how ill was she? Because we were told that it was a chest infection, possibly pneumonia, nothing that sounded immediately life-threatening.
Oh, no, she was extremely ill. If we'd known what we were dealing with, she'd have been moved straight to ITU. But, sadly...
Yeah. It's all pretty sad.
Dr. Grant gets a meal from a microwave.
Well, if that's everything you need...
Yes. Thanks for your help.
What help?
The young doctor goes.
I was using the term loosely.
MIU Central Headquarters, Bow Street, WC2.
So, she had mild bronchitis, she had chemical pneumonitis, she was dramatising her symptoms, she should have been in ITU. The only thing that everyone agrees on is that no one did anything wrong.
Yeah.
Is it any clearer in the notes?
Oh, yeah, as mud. Basically, we could be dealing with another Dr. Crippen, and I just would not have a clue. Although, look, judging from some of the handwriting, I'd say half these doctors were serial killers anyway.
I don't know, mate. Give me a shooting in an alley any day of the week. At least I know how to spot a smoking gun.
Look at this. There's a word crossed out here that looks like it says code name.
What, in the notes?
No, on the chart.
Are you allowed to cross something out on a chart? I mean, isn't it an official record?
I've no idea. I think we ought to arrange a rendezvous with Deep Throat.
Matt looks intrigued.
Not the porn film.
Sister Logan.
Any mistake should be clearly initialed, but if someone's in a rush, they might forget.
Would you ever get any staff going back later on to amend the charts, maybe correct something if they've got it wrong?
Oh, if somebody did that, they'd be tampering with hospital records, which is definitely illegal.
Could that be what's happened here?
It's possible, but it looks to me like someone just crossed codeine out and wrote paracetamol.
All right, not code name, then.
See, they're common painkillers. The prescribing doctor could just have changed their mind.
All right, so if Suzanne Morton was given codeine rather than paracetamol, what sort of difference to her would that have made?
Well, there are certain situations where codeine's contraindicated.
Meaning?
There's a very good reason why you shouldn't prescribe it. But that would have been noted down when she was admitted. Should be at the beginning of her notes.
It's not there.
There's a report by the triage nurse. It stops halfway through. There's a page missing.
She pushes the notes over to Ronnie and Matt.
Looks like we've just found our smoking gun.
Do you have any idea who could have changed the name of the drug on this chart?
Well, any of the staff could have had access, Gov. The handwriting on the page, including the word coding, looks a lot like Dr. Grant's. He was indeed the registrar treating Suzanne Morton, so...
Well, why don't we bring him in and push him a bit?
No. I want to know what was in that missing patient history. We've got to be sure this is a cover-up, not just a coincidence.
Is that Suzanne's dad?
Yeah. He's been in every day.
Natalie goes to him. Ladbroke Grove Medical Centre, North Kensington.
Susie was an anxious young woman with a history of serious depression. Sad thing is, we finally found a way of managing it effectively.
She on medication?
I referred her to an adolescent psychiatrist in her early teens, and over the past, 5 years, she'd been on pretty much every antidepressant going, with very little success. So, as a last resort, we tried her on phenazine sulfate, and that really seemed to help.
Right, and with this, phenazine sulfate. Can you take that along with other drugs? Painkillers, that kind of thing?
Well, you have to be careful. I mean, if you combine phenazine with an opiate-based analgesic, then it would almost certainly prove fatal.
When you say opiate-based?
Morphine, codeine, that type of thing.
Ronnie and Matt share a look at the morgue.
OK, the tox screen shows paracetamol, it shows aspirin, and it shows an antihistamine.
And what about phenazine sulfate?
Not on this test.
But we know that the girl was taking phenazine sulfate.
Well, she may have been, but it's not something that would show up on the standard test.
Brilliant. Does that go for codeine too?
Depends how long she was taking it for.
OK, well, why don't you order another tox screen, one that actually shows up with the phenazine or codeines in the girl's system, and this time, can you please make it urgent?
These tests don't come cheap, you know, and you may not have heard we've had some budget cuts.
But then we'll have a whip round.
Fine. It won't be before tomorrow. And you're wasting your time. You'd have to be an idiot to take codeine with phenazine. It could kill you.
Deep breath, son. Come on, let's go.
Matt seethes as he leaves. Dr. Grant is interviewed.
It was a busy night. I wrote codeine without thinking, but I gave her paracetamol.
So why didn't you put your initials to the correction?
Like I say, it was busy. I must have forgotten. It was a simple mistake.
Sure. And did you know that some of Suzanne Morton's patient history notes had gone missing?
The notes go missing in the emergency department all the time. Anyway, the girl died of pneumonia-related complications. They had nothing to do with her history.
Not even the heavy-duty antidepressants that she was on at the time.
Sorry?
Well, Suzanne Morton had been taking phenazine sulfate for the last 6 months. Surely that was on the history.
No, it wasn't.
Oh, that is odd, because we spoke to the triage nurse and she's pretty sure that she included a full history, including all current medication.
Either way, I wrote the wrong drug on the chart. But that's all. Now, haven't you ever made a mistake?
Yes, of course. Dr. Grant, difference is, when you make one, people end up dying.
Well, this is crazy. But I didn't cause Suzanne Morton's death.
Fine. We'll see if the tox screen agrees with you. Shall we?
I thought they'd already done the post-mortem.
We decided to dig a little deeper.
Dr. Grant eyes them nervously. MIU headquarters, Bow Street.
Should have seen his face. I thought he was going to throw up.
Certainly sounds like a guilty conscience.
Trouble is, Gov, even if the drugs show up on the top screen, no one actually witnessed Grant give her the injection.
Well, it makes sense, though. He messed up, she died, he panicked, tried to cover it up.
He scratched out a name, tore a page out of her notes and hoped for the best. We're not exactly dealing with a mastermind here.
No, listen, still, if we hadn't gone looking, no one would have noticed. It makes you wonder what else he's got away with. Cheers.
Matt takes a report from an envelope and reads it.
Positive for phenazine, positive for codeine.
OK, this is not a coincidence. Bring him in.
So it's Dr. Grant.
Oh, well, we'd just like to have another chat.
I should have known.
What makes you say that?
The nurses always know when someone's out of their depths. Half the time he had to call in Dr. Alston because he hadn't a clue what was going on. Maybe he's on his rounds in CDU. Kathy, yes. Do you have Dr. Grant with you?
Sister Logan's eyes widen.
OK. He didn't turn up for a shift and nobody's seen him since yesterday morning.
With Natalie.
Checked his flat, no sign, but his car is still outside. We've got uniform trying the neighbours, but the trouble is they're mostly still at work.
We've stationed officers at the hospital, but as far as we can tell, no one's seen him since he clocked off yesterday.
Have you spoken to the family?
Well, we're still trying to track them down.
Well, if we didn't think he was guilty before, I think we do now.
Good, we've got a hit on Adrian Grant's credit card. He's just bought a ticket at St Pancras International.
So he's going to Paris?
Bruges. The next train's in 45 minutes.
Come on.
St Pancras International Station, London, NW1. Uniformed police march through the cavernous terminal, followed by Ronnie and Matt.
Right, they've covered all the main exits, just haven't made a platform announcement yet.
So it could be anywhere.
Yeah.
Right, let's fan out.
Ronnie and Matt go their separate ways and search with the cops. Police show photographs of Dr. Grant to passers-by.
Sorry, excuse me.
The concourse is heaving with people. Ronnie walks past a stairway and looks up. He then looks ahead at a young man and points. It's not Dr. Grant. Ronnie screws up his face in annoyance. Matt keeps looking this way and that. Matt heads to an escalator, runs up it, and turns to look around. He spots a man in a blue hooded top and gets on his radio.
All units, I've got eyeballs on the suspect. He's halfway down the concourse outside international arrival. He's wearing a blue cagoule and a holdall. He's on the move. I repeat, suspect is on the move. He's heading back.
Along the concourse towards me. Repeat, suspect is on the move. Excuse me, ladies.
Ronnie follows Matt's instructions. Matt runs back down the escalator to assist. Matt dashes through the crowds, then stops to look around. He turns his focus onto the gents' toilets. Matt runs into the gents. He walks along a line of cubicles and pushes two doors open. He stops at a locked door and peers down under the gap at the bottom of the door. Matt straightens up.
Dr. Adrian Grant, this is DS Matt Devlin. I need you to open up. Right. Seriously, Doc, either you come out or I'm coming in, yeah?
Matt uses a coin to unlock the door from the outside, pushes his way in, and grabs Dr. Grant.
Dr. Adrian Grant, I'm arresting you on suspicion of the manslaughter of Suzanne Morton. You do not have to say anything, but it may harm your defence. You do not mention, when questioned, something which you later rely on in court. Anything you do say may be given in evidence.
Ronnie comes in.
I hope you let him wash his hands first.
He picks up Grant's bag. In an interview room, Dr. Grant sits beside his solicitor. Ronnie wanders in.
I really don't think I want to say anything at this stage.
Ronnie sits smirking at Grant. Matt drops a report onto the desk and sits beside Ronnie.
I'd say trying to skip the country speaks volumes, wouldn't you?
You don't understand. I panicked. I didn't know what else to do. They've been too clever.
Sorry, they. Who's they, Dr. Grant?
Austin, Mills, the nurses, the whole lot of them. They're all in on it and they've lied to make me take the fall.
So it's all one big conspiracy?
Yes. Yes, it is.
And what, they put a gun to your head? Made you give Suzanne Morton the coding?
No, I didn't give her anything. It was Austin. He gave the injection. I just filled in the chart. I didn't even know it was wrong. Not till after the girl had died.
And that's when you went back and changed the coding to paracetamol.
No, you're not listening to me. I didn't change anything. That was Christine. Christine Mills.
Oh, I see. So they really are all in on it then, aren't they?
Yes. Yes, they are.
Ronnie smiles smugly.
Funny why you never mentioned that before, though, isn't it?
Christine told me to keep quiet and it'd be okay. She said they'd tell the family it was pneumonia.
I thought it was you who told Mr. Morton it was pneumonia. Didn't you speak to him the next day?
Yes, Yes, I did, but only because I had to go along with it. But they gave me no choice.
Right, let me get this straight. Dr. Edward Austin just walks onto the ward and randomly gives your patient, Suzanne Morton, an injection of codeine.
He's erratic sometimes. Ask anyone. Everyone in the hospital knows he's a drinker.
And Dr. Mills? Oh, is she a drinker too?
Well, no, of course not. But she'll do anything to protect Austin. She's got a thing for him, has done for years.
Matt scoffs. Grant looks petrified.
You've no idea what it's like. They all stick together. It's like a code of silence.
It's like dealing with the medical mafia.
Cosa Nostra in the NHS.
No, I swear, I'm telling the truth.
With Alicia Phillips.
So basically, Dr. Grant, he's going for the shaggy defence.
It wasn't me.
Exactly. Well, young person's music, Matty. My girls keep me with it.
Oh, you were doing really well. Till you said with it.
You know, it still may not be enough to charge him.
What? You are kidding, right?
Well, the only real evidence is his handwriting on the chart.
And the drugs in Suzanne Morton's system.
Not to mention the one-way ticket to Belgium. Come on, Alicia. If he's not guilty, why does he run?
Natalie comes in.
Someone I think you should meet.
She switches on a screen which shows a young man.
He's just flown in from Milan and wants to know why we're looking for him.
And are we looking for him?
I believe we are, yes. That's Dr. Adrian Grant.
Well, if that's Adrian Grant,
then who the hell is he?
The man they were interviewing on another screen.
I was at an MSF conference in Italy when I got this crazy phone call from my mum saying that the police were looking for me.
And you've been working in Haiti for the last year?
Yeah. And Burkina Faso before that. See, I joined the Médecins Sans Frontières when I finished my foundation training. I wanted to do my bit, you know.
And you haven't worked in this country since?
No. Well, they tried telling my mum that. She's convinced I've been lying to her for the last 2 years.
A photo of the imposter.
Do you recognise this man?
Yeah. Yeah, it's Ian. Ian Naylor.
Ronnie and Matt frown.
And how do you know Dr. Naylor?
Me and Ian shared a flat together for a couple of months, just before I went away. But Ian's not a doctor, he's a chiropodist.
Jacob Thorne and Alicia Phillips.
Ian Naylor and Adrian Grant were medical students together at Durham until Naylor failed his second year exams and dropped out. Well, they lost touch, but Grant was looking for a place to live a couple of years back and he heard that Naylor had a room going.
Apparently Naylor trained as a chiropodist, seems he never actually practiced though.
Can't blame him, all those feet.
Well, when Grant went off to Africa to save lives, he left some of his stuff in storage with Naylor, including his personal papers, his medical qualifications, his birth certificate, the lot.
And Naylor just helped himself?
Pretty much, yeah. Borrowed the birth certificate, applied for a new passport and driving licence, then got himself a job at the Alderman with Grant's qualifications.
So this man's been passing himself off as a doctor at a major London teaching hospital for nearly 2 years.
Reassuring, isn't it? Put on a white coat, stethoscope, people believe anything you say.
Ronnie smiles.
Bit like a wig and a gown.
Too right. I've been getting away with it for years.
Director of CPS, Henry Sharp.
You realise the Prime Minister had his adenoids removed at the Alderman?
I remember the press conference. He was very impressed by the staff's professionalism.
Well, that's come back to bite him.
Well, and truly, a rogue chiropodist stalking the wards is the stuff PR nightmares are made of. So, as you can imagine, a lot of people would like this to go away. ASAP.
They'll have to wait for the medical negligence inquiry. So far, we've got Naylor on at least 10 counts. Fraud by false representation, forgery, false instruments, not to mention manslaughter.
Oh, I take it we've had the call from the defence.
Yeah, Robinson wants to meet. Given the evidence, I'm expecting a straight guilty plea on the fraud.
Then take it. Get things moving. We can always prosecute for the rest further down the line.
So long as we do. Naylor wasn't just playing doctor. He actually killed someone.
And when we can nail him for it, we will. But for now, let's focus on the fraud. Not like our friend Naylor's got a foot to stand on.
Henry beams.
Foot? Chiropodist? No?
My client is prepared to plead to 2 main counts of fraud.
And what about the other 8 counts on the indictment?
Well, given the fact that a guilty plea would eliminate the need for a rather long and costly trial... Well,
very cost-conscious.
And bearing in mind my client's mental state...
What mental state is that?
Well, Mr. Naylor's seen an expert in delusional behaviour since his arrest. She's helped him to understand what triggered the events of the last 2 years.
Really? Some kind of deep-seated trauma, I presume?
I had some emotional problems when I was a medical student. Well, I now see that I had some kind of breakdown.
Unfortunately, Mr. Naylor, in this case, your mental state can't be used as a defense.
Well, can we at least agree to drop this groundless manslaughter charge?
Well, I'd hardly call it groundless.
Well, Mr. Naylor has already identified an alcoholic colleague as being responsible for Suzanne Morton's death.
Unfortunately, no one else supports his allegations, which leaves your client holding the syringe, so to speak.
Well, no, you're not pinning that girl's death on me. It was Austin. I don't care what his cronies have told you. Talk to the junior doctors. Well, talk to Simonson. He nearly lost a patient because of him.
Dr. Simonson.
It was about 6 months ago. This guy, 25, basically healthy, walks in with the worst headache of his life. Slight soreness in the neck, but it was ambiguous.
And Dr. Austin treated him?
He prescribed him morphine, which is probably the worst thing you can do. It masks the symptoms of meningitis, which is what the guy had. But Dr. Mills found it in time and he was okay in the end, but...
But it could have ended very differently.
I don't want to get anyone into trouble. It's just one of those things.
Is that the only time Dr. Austin made a mistake like that?
Yes. I mean, I don't know. People make mistakes. And Dr. Austin, he's getting older. He gets tired, especially since his accident.
In a conference room...
Naylor's sticking to his story about Austin, but no one will back him up about the drinking.
And even with the one confirmed incident of Austin misdiagnosing a patient, the general attitude appears to be, you win some, you lose some.
Yeah, well... Dr. Austin may well have been losing a few more than his share.
What do you mean?
Well, we looked into those deaths. Naylor was down as attendant registrar for both, but it turns out the night that Anna Jeffries died, he had an upset stomach. He went home, Austin stepped in. And then, with the other one, Carl Hobbs, his daughters reckon that Naylor had a brief word with their dad and then handed over to, and I quote, some posh old bloke with grey hair.
Austin.
Yeah, so we got onto the medical negligence team who cross-ref patients that they'd flagged up and, well, it turns out that Austin's name comes up on another 5 files.
So, what? Austin's been slowly losing his marbles and nobody's noticed?
That is one explanation, however, there is another, and that is that Austin was done for drink driving several times in the late 80s, finally disqualified from driving in 1990, and his blood alcohol level was off the charts.
The ward sister mentioned a car crash, said he'd been teetotal ever since.
He could have fallen off the wagon.
The sister's pretty sharp. You think she'd notice someone showing up late, smelling of booze.
Although you'd be amazed what a person can hide if they put their mind to it.
There was another car crash. Austin came off his bike about 3 years ago. Sister Logan said he was on painkillers so he could keep working, but from what Simonson says, Austin's never been the same since.
So he was in pain, he was having trouble coping with work.
A couple of Nurofen Plus taken in the right or the wrong state of mind. Well, that's nearly as good as a stiff whiskey.
And a lot easier to hide.
Dr. Malcolm Chester's office.
Very straightforward. Some hooligan in a van turned left without indicating, and Teddy took the brunt of it.
I understand he was prescribed painkillers for his back injury.
Of course he was. The man was in agony. Even with the codeine, he was bedbound for nearly a month.
Do you usually prescribe codeine for a patient with a history of alcohol abuse?
History of what?
Dr. Austin lost his license after a string of drink driving offences.
For heaven's sake, that was years ago. Teddy sorted himself out after that. I was hardly going to withhold pain relief because he used to like a few drinks.
Did Dr. Austin ever ask for a repeat prescription?
I can't discuss that.
Well, might he have continued prescribing it for himself?
You'd have to ask him. If he did, it would have been perfectly legal. The man's a doctor.
Well, that's all right then.
GMC guidelines say that doctors should avoid self-prescribing, but there aren't any statutory restrictions. So basically, Austin can write himself as many private prescriptions as he likes.
We still need to get them filled. Did you check with the hospital pharmacy?
Yeah, if Austin has got some kind of drug problem, he's not getting them from there.
And did you talk to any more of the staff?
Yeah, and I got more of the same. Austin's highly competent, sometimes patients die, blah, blah, blah. We'll start pushing about medical errors and everyone clowns up.
Not everyone.
Crown Prosecution Service.
So you now want to question Mr. Naylor as a potential witness, not as a defendant?
It's one simple question.
Which I'm sure my client would be more than happy to answer, assuming you are dropping the manslaughter charge against
him. Oh, let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Well, in that case, perhaps we should discuss my previous proposal about fraud charges.
You realise I was the only one who saw Austin give the injection?
I'm not here to bargain with you, Mr. Naylor.
Of course not. It's just easy to get confused about things. Especially with all these different charges hanging over me.
Jacob looks affronted.
At the moment, your entire defence against killing Suzanne Morton is based upon your accusation against Dr. Austin. Withdraw that statement and you'll go back to being the prime suspect.
But hey, it's up to you. Who knows? You might enjoy the extra time in prison.
Jacob goes. Ian Naylor looks down, unnerved. Henry looks through piles of files.
You could have just dropped the manslaughter charge. Wasn't that what we agreed in the first place?
But at that stage, we still thought Naylor was guilty.
But now we don't.
No. And now he's trying to blackmail us.
Well, sometimes criminals can be less than ethical. Still, life's all about compromise.
There was no need to compromise. Naylor was bluffing.
I'm glad you're so sure, because at the moment the only thing linking Austin to Suzanne Morton's death is Naylor's statement.
And he won't go back on it. He knows he's got too much to lose.
Doesn't that worry you? For all we know, he could just be pointing the finger to save his own skin.
Or he could be telling the truth. There's a first time for everything.
Either way, we please lose the manslaughter charge before you end up in court with no evidence.
Henry looks at patches of paint on his office wall.
Appalachian Mist. Autumn Sonata.
They're all quiet.
Grey.
Mm.
Something you'd like to share?
Naylor's pleading guilty to all counts relating to the fraud.
They go to see Ronnie at his desk.
3 years, which means he'll be out in 18 months.
That's the guy waiting for a person after the doctor, is it?
Apparently so, if you come up with a good enough sob story.
Well, it should cheer you up. Turns out Dr. Austin gets regular prescriptions filled at 13 different places, all for codeine, all in his own name.
That's one hell of a backache.
Apparently, he's got a nice little system going. That's for sure. Keeps him on rotation, so no one gets suspicious. Picks up only a month's worth of pills from any one place at a time, but it's ramped up over the years. In the last 6 months, seems as though he's popping them in like Smarties. Wonder the man can stand up.
Dr. Christine Mills.
This is insane. Edward Austin is not an addict.
Well, we have records from 13 different pharmacies dating back over 3 years, which strongly suggest otherwise.
We've already got what we need to prosecute Austin for gross negligence manslaughter. Now, you need to start thinking about yourself. We know that Austin persuaded you to lie for him. At the very least, you're looking at a charge for perverting the course of justice.
It wasn't like that.
Then tell us what happened.
She slowly looks up at Jacob and Alicia.
I wasn't called until the girl arrested. When I looked through her notes, I saw that she'd been on phenelzine, and I confronted Dr. Grant. Naylor. He said that he'd asked Dr. Austin to take a look at her. And that he'd been the one to give her the codeine.
So what did you do?
Dr. Austin was asleep in the on-call room. He was very groggy when I woke him. He had no idea he'd done anything wrong.
He admitted to giving the injection.
She nods.
I don't think he even noticed the phenelzine in her history. I mean, any half-decent registrar would have flagged that up immediately.
But he didn't have a half-decent registrar. He had Ian Naylor.
I couldn't see him hung out to dry for one mistake. So I altered the chart and I removed the notes.
So Austin told you to lie for him?
He didn't have to. I wanted to help. But if I'd known about the addiction...
You'd have thought twice about protecting a killer.
Eyeing her sternly, Jacob nods.
When they searched Austin's house, they found pills everywhere. Jacket pockets, behind radiators. He put a lot of them in aspirin bottles. Apparently his wife was totally oblivious.
Her and the rest of the world.
Yeah.
Medical degree from Oxford, trained at UCLH. Went on to become one of the first registrars in his year to be made consultant.
Alicia, I don't think you know Philip Neddins, Dr. Austin's defence. Philip is...
Regular contributor to The Lancet and the British Medical Journal on the subject of emergency medicine, given the Halliwell Award for conspicuous services to healthcare in 2003.
Does he walk on water too?
He's a good man, Jacob, and a dedicated doctor. Not like the trash you usually spend your time prosecuting. Seriously, the old guy's 2 years off retirement and he's given his life to the NHS. Why do you want to destroy him?
The patient died, having been given the wrong drug. Manslaughter. The drug was administered by a consultant who was high on prescription medication at the time. Manslaughter, gross negligence.
Well, I guess we know where we stand.
Guess so.
Crown v. Austin, trial day one.
Suzanne Morton was still complaining about muscle pains when Dr. Austin arrived. He examined her briefly, but he seemed tired and distracted. And I noticed that he only glanced over the patient history. He then administered an injection of codeine for the pain and left me to fill in the chart.
Thank you. No further questions.
Philip Nevins stands.
Mr. Naylor. That is your correct title, isn't it? Not Dr. Naylor.
Mr. is fine.
Because you never actually qualified as a medical doctor, did you?
No.
In fact, you're currently serving a 3-year custodial sentence for fraud by false representation, are you not?
That's correct.
So we're expected to believe the word of a convicted con man and professional fraudster?
Well, Dr. Austin gave that patient the wrong medication.
And you simply stood by and let it happen?
At the time, I didn't realize it was wrong.
Of course you didn't, because you weren't a doctor. In fact, given your complete lack of medical knowledge, Mr. Naylor, you must have been an absolute liability on the ward.
But that's not true.
Indeed, who knows how many wrong prescriptions you made out, how many symptoms you misdiagnosed.
My lord.
I was careful. I knew what I was doing.
You mean you thought you knew what you were doing?
My lord, the witness is not on trial.
No, I was just as good as the other registrars. That's what was so frustrating.
No further questions, my lord.
Naylor drops his head against his hands.
If I may, my lord. Mr. Naylor, you say it was frustrating. In what way?
Well, I knew I could treat the patients just as well as they could. But unlike them, I couldn't risk making a mistake. That's why I paged Austin. That's why I only ever did exactly what I was told. And that's why I never prescribed a drug without checking with someone else first. Well, can't you see? That's how I got away with it for so long. If I'd have messed up, I'd have lost everything.
He looks along the gallery desperately.
Well, wasn't that stupid?
He looks at Jacob, who nods. Nevins addresses Dr. Mills.
Dr. Mills, you say Dr. Austin admitted to having given the codeine injection.
Yes.
And what did he say when you asked him if he'd seen the reference to phenylzine sulfate in the patient's notes?
I didn't ask him that question.
So, is it possible that having asked for a second opinion, Mr. Naylor simply gave a verbal summary of the patient history?
Yes, it's possible.
And is it also possible that he failed to realize the significance of the phenylzine sulfate, maybe even failed to mention it by name?
I suppose so, yes.
And you have worked closely with Dr. Austin for the past 8 years. Have you at any time had reason to believe that he was suffering from any form of addiction?
No.
And this self-prescribed medication that my learned friend has repeatedly drawn our attention to. These were painkillers for a genuine and serious injury, were they not?
Yes. Yes, they were.
And finally, Dr. Mills, do you consider Dr. Austin to be a good doctor?
He's the best I've ever worked with. He's an inspiration.
She looks over at Austin, who smiles softly at her. Jacob and Alicia on the street.
Guess we were worried about the wrong witness.
So what if Austin didn't read the history himself? He was still negligent. He prescribed medication without due care and attention because his judgment was impaired by his addiction.
I'm not sure the jury even believes he has an addiction.
My Susie was 18. 18 with a whole life ahead of her, and you took that away, Mr. Morton. You put that needle in her arm, no one else, and you won't even admit you messed up.
Mr. Morton, I'm truly sorry for what happened to your daughter. It wasn't my fault. There were a number of contributing factors. Edward. You have to understand.
A security guard holds Howard Morton back.
Get off me! You killed my Susie, you murderer!
Austin is driven away with Nevins. Alicia looks at statements with Jacob.
You could see it when he talked to the dad. He knows he's to blame.
I don't know. He's hidden his addiction for 3 years. I'd say he's pretty good at denial.
Well, maybe this time around. What about last time? When I asked Austin's doctor about the drink driving, he said Teddy had sorted himself out. Now, not many people can give up drinking overnight.
Maybe he had help, went into rehab.
And what's the first step to recovery?
Admitting you have an addiction.
So, if Austin knew he was an addict when he started taking codeine, then he knew the risks and he knew what it could mean for his patients, in which case the crime happened before he even stepped onto the ward.
Alicia considers. Austin's in the witness box.
Dr. Austin, are you aware of an establishment called the Colson Clinic?
I don't know.
You spent 3 months there in 1990, isn't that right?
Yes, it is.
Can you tell the court what kind of clinic it is?
It's a center for drug and alcohol rehabilitation.
A center that specifically caters for medical professionals with addiction problems. So, you considered yourself to be an alcoholic?
I considered myself to have a drink problem.
Meaning that you couldn't control your drinking and needed professional help in order to stop?
I suppose so.
Well, I think that's basically what's meant by the term alcoholic. Dr. Austin, could you tell me the advice on prescribing codeine to patients with a history of alcohol abuse?
It's generally avoided.
And why is that? Actually, I have the information here. Codeine is habit-forming and should not be prescribed to any patient with a history of drug or alcohol abuse due to the high risk of addiction. Does that sound about right?
Yes.
So, knowing you had a history of addiction, you chose to start taking a highly habit-forming drug.
I hadn't had a drink for 17 years. I was in a great deal of pain. The benefits outweighed the risks.
Yet, 3 years on, you are still taking that same drug. And to be clear, we're not talking about a couple of headache pills here and there. You've been on doses way above the recommended guidelines. In fact, a closer equivalent would be downing half a bottle of vodka before you went to work.
It's hardly the same.
Could you tell the court the common side effects of prolonged codeine use?
They vary.
But a patient may become distracted. Their response is dulled. They can experience fatigue or nausea. Isn't that right? So you could say that it would affect someone's professional judgment.
It might, but as I explained...
They might read a document, for example, and miss a crucial piece of information.
They might, but as I've explained...
Dr. Austin, can you tell me the correct dosage for diamorphine for a 50-year-old male patient?
What? Yes. 100 milligrams.
100? You're sure about that?
Yes. No, sorry. I meant 10. 10 milligrams.
Just like that, a 50-year-old male dies of an overdose.
My lord.
What about the dosage for a woman in her 20s or a ventilated newborn infant?
I'd have to check.
Because you can't think clearly under pressure anymore, can you, Dr. Austin? Which means that because of your dependence on codeine, you are a danger not only to yourself, but to every patient who's come under your care.
No. It was a mistake. It could have happened to anyone.
No. Dr. Austin, it happened because of your addiction.
I am not an addict. I haven't taken any medication in months.
Then you won't mind emptying your pockets.
My lord, this is outrageous.
Not at all. I'm offering Dr. Austin the chance to prove his point. No addiction, then no need for tablets.
Frowning, Nevin sits.
Very well, I'll allow it. Dr. Austin, if you'd be so good as to place the contents of your pockets where we can see them.
Austin stands still for a moment, then reaches into his jacket pockets. He takes out a wallet and lays it on the wooden ledge in front of him. Then a set of keys. Austin falters, and his jowly features twitch hesitantly. Alicia, Howard Morton, and the members of the jury watch intently. Austin takes out a bottle of pills and places them in front of him. The jurors look on, surprised.
Dr. Austin, can you confirm for the court that those are prescription codeine tablets?
Yes.
And can you tell the court how many of those tablets you've taken today?
I'm not sure.
Sorry, could you repeat that?
I don't know how many I've taken today.
Well, more than two? More than five? More than 20?
Austin frowns and looks down. Jacob watches him fixedly. Austin's brow is pinched. It creases and twitches, and he looks up sheepishly.
I never meant to harm anyone.
Howard Morton stares at him, frowning, tight-lipped. Jacob regards Austin impassively. At the CPS, Henry looks in on Alicia and Jacob in their office.
A guilty verdict after only 20 minutes. We must have done something right.
McVeigh still only gave him a 2-year suspended.
Elderly judge nearing the end of his career. Hardly surprising. He could appeal the sentence.
I don't think so.
Not going soft in our old age, are we?
No, just don't think I'd win.
Henry smiles and goes. Alicia stares at Jacob, who notices.
What?
She shakes her head.
Thought I'd seen a glimmer of humanity. But no,
my mistake.
The characters and events in this film are entirely fictitious, and accordingly, any similarity between them and actual characters or events is entirely coincidental. ITFC Audio Description.